Hi, I'm your host, Brad Riddle. I grew up reading the newspaper sports section every morning, and I picked up a lot of random knowledge. This podcast is where I share it. If you love sports history like me, I'd love for you to subscribe. Go to grumpybuck.com, that's G-R-U-M-P-Y-B-U-C-K, like the deer, .com, and you'll see Sports Wax Podcast in the menu. Go to the podcast page, enter your email, and you're on the list. It's super easy. This time next year, the Winter Olympics will have just concluded. To get you excited for what's to come, here's the story behind one of the most remarkable and stunning moments in Olympic history. I hope you enjoy.
By all accounts, the Soviet takeover was meticulously planned and skillfully executed. But it has not been clear just how the Soviets were able to set up their coup without the Afghans realizing what they had in mind.
The Cold War dominated the second half of the 20th century. The Soviet Union and United States were constantly at odds, but they never actually met on the battlefield, not face to face at least. Instead, they fought proxy wars, engagements large and small where the U.S. would support the Soviet's opponent and vice versa. This happened in places like Korea and Vietnam, Berlin and Afghanistan. So when the United States and Soviet Union did meet in sports, on the field or court or ice, it was a really big deal.
In 1980, as in 1932, we New Yorkers are honored to host these games and to contribute to their success.
The world came to Lake Placid, New York for the Winter Olympics in February 1980. The United States brought a hockey team made up of college kids. The Soviet Union brought a hockey team widely believed to be the best in the world at the time. When the two teams faced each other, there was buzz leading up to the game, but nothing like today. There was no lengthy pregame show, there were no NHL players on the ice. The telecast didn't feature any loud graphics or celebrity guests. In fact, the game didn't even air live in the United States. The only people on U.S. soil who watched in real time were sitting in an 8,500-seat arena in upstate New York. What they saw was one of the most unlikely and unbelievable upsets in sports history. You might even call it a miracle. This is Sports Wax, a weekly documentary where we explore sports stories from yesteryear, memories of players, coaches, and games that take us back in time. Welcome to Episode 5, Olympic History, on tape delay.
49 seconds remain. USA 3, USSR 2. On the face-off, Bill Christian, who has two goals this evening.
Ice hockey didn't arrive in the Soviet Union until the 1940s. Inspired by teams in other countries, the Soviets created their own league in 1946. And they got really good at it really fast. The Soviets showed up at the World Championships for the first time in 1954, and they won the gold medal, shocking Canada in the final game. They won gold again at the 1956 Olympics in Italy, where the Americans took the silver.
Replacing Sitsinov.
This is the 1960 Winter Olympics in Squaw Valley, California. The U.S. and Soviet Union are playing in the medal round. The Americans are up 3-2 with just a few seconds left.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and the game is over. The United States wins.
Team USA plays Czechoslovakia tomorrow, but this essentially clinches the gold. The Soviets lost, but it's going to be a while before it happens again. Over the next four Olympics, they go 24-1-1. They outscore opponents 210 to just 48, and they win four gold medals. The Soviets get so good that Canada boycotts international tournaments. The Canadians accuse the Soviets of sending professionals when other teams are sending amateurs. Instead, the Soviets play an annual series against a team of NHL All-Stars.
High and wide. Now it's back into the center ice area.
This is one of those exhibitions. It's 1979, and the two teams have split the first two games of the series. But the Soviets are dominating Game 3. Just listen to this.
In the clear, Makarov going in on the backhand, scores! Makarov! Now, I think that's three goals on three straight shots for the Soviets achievers here in this final period.
Three goals and three shots? It's a shellacking. If there was any doubt before, now it's clear. The Soviets have the best hockey team in the world. What makes them so good? Well, the Soviet players only do one thing, hockey. They practice 1,200 hours a year. That's more than 3 hours a day. It's estimated they practice three times more than anyone else in the world. And there's zero turnover on the team. These guys spend 11 months out of the year together. They know each other, their teamwork is seamless, their skills are a thing of beauty. So, yes, as the 1980 Olympics draw closer, the Soviets are sending the best team in the world, no doubt. And the Americans? They're sending kids from Boston University, Minnesota, and other northern schools. The average age is just 22. The team's coach is a humorless hockey lifer named Herb Brooks. Brooks was the head coach at Minnesota. When he's picked to lead the 1980 Olympic team, he builds a brutal 63-game schedule that takes his team all over the world. He's ruthless with his conditioning and with his punishment. After a 3-3 tie against lowly Norway, he makes the team skate for more than an hour. And he does something really strange. He schedules a friendly against the Soviets at Madison Square Garden just 2 weeks before the Olympics. This is audio of the game. It's February 9th, 1980, and the Soviets are just obliterating the United States. The match ends 10-3. Losing by seven can't give the Americans a lot of confidence heading into Lake Placid.
Getting that 1 point, they would certainly have that medal aspiration.
This is Team USA's first game in the Olympics. It's division play, and it looks like their medal dreams are already dead. They're trailing Sweden 2-1, and there's less than a minute to play.
For the U.S., Pavlich on the blue line, Baker and Ramsey. Ramsey's got the puck, there's the shot.
Herb Brooks pulls goalie Jim Craig. And then something miraculous happens, something that gives the team a spark. Listen to this.
Against the boards, it's rolled out in front, here's a chance, scores! Baker! And the Olympic Arena here in Lake Placid goes crazy.
Bill Baker buries a slap shot with just 27 seconds left. The Americans and Swedes tie, and the U.S. catches fire. They shock silver medal favorite Czechoslovakia by winning 7-3. Then they rattle off three more victories over Norway, Romania, and West Germany to go 4-0-1 in division play. They're one of just four teams to make the medal round. Waiting for them there, the Soviet Union.
We started with a trip up the great river Henry Hudson discovered in 1609, looking for that fabled Northwest Passage to the Orient.
This is Jim McKay, the MC of these Olympics on American television. McKay's employer, ABC, has a really tough decision to make. The U.S.-Soviet hockey game is scheduled for 5 p.m. Eastern on Friday, February 22nd. The network asked the Olympic Committee to shift it to 8 p.m. ABC wants the game in primetime for obvious reasons, but the Soviets object. The game would start at 4 a.m. Moscow time. ABC's tough decision is this. Do we air it live when people are still driving home from work on a Friday? Or do we air it on tape delay in primetime? ABC goes with option two, the tape delay.
In a political or nationalistic sense, I'm sure this game is being viewed with varying perspectives, but manifestly, it is a hockey game.
This is Al Michaels. He's taping the call along with NHL goalie Ken Dryden.
Well, Al, for the U.S. team, it's really discovery time. It's one thing to be young and promising, and it's quite another to be good. And in the next 2.5 hours, the U.S. team players will go through perhaps the most difficult and demanding yet exhilarating time of their lives. They will be playing against a very good team, a team that's better than they are. And after that time, after it's all over, this team will find out an awful lot about themselves. They'll simply find out how good they are.
Dryden doesn't outright say it, but he's not giving the U.S. a chance. No one does. The Soviets have stars up and down their roster. For many of them, this is their third Olympics playing on the exact same line with the exact same teammates. And they have the best goalie in the world, 27-year-old Vladislav Tretiak.
Here we go, as the game is underway. The Soviet Union in red and the United States in white. The U.S. finishing second in the blue division, and the Soviets on top in the red division. Jim Craig again.
Early in the game, the Soviets are shelling American goalie Jim Craig. Dryden likes what Craig's doing, but the Americans need to be better on defense. Predictably, the Soviets score first.
Losing it, out to the point. Slap shot, and it was deflected in from the point. The Soviet Union takes a 1-0 lead. Kasatkina's slap shot.
You might expect a bunch of college kids to fold after going down early. But ever since the Sweden game, the Americans have played with a confidence and resilience they didn't have weeks earlier when they played the Soviets in a friendly at Madison Square Garden. You know, the 10-3 loss. And there's something else going on. The Soviets do have the best goalie in the world, Vladislav Tretiak, but he's not playing all that well in these Olympics. With 6 minutes left in the first period, he gives up a really surprising goal.
Pavlich up ahead to Schneider. Shot goes in! But Schneider! That's the type of goal you don't expect somebody like Tretiak to give up.
The Soviets score again with 2.5 minutes left in the first, and Craig is fighting for his life, turning away a ton of shots for the U.S. There's a here-we-go-again feeling spreading through the crowd. But the first period closes with a moment that changes the entire trajectory of the game. Dave Christian of the U.S. fires a shot from 100 feet away with just seconds left in the period. Tretiak makes the save, but he can't control the puck. It trickles out in front of the net, and American Mark Johnson puts it back in with just 1 second left on the clock. Here's the call from Al Michaels.
Long shot, the easy save by Tretiak, but Johnson is there and scores with 1 second to play in the period. Right now the clock shows nothing, but it was stopped at one when we looked up as the goal was scored. Right now it shows nothing as the period apparently has come to an end. But the United States has tied the game.
The game's tied at two going into the second period, and there's a huge surprise waiting for everyone. Vladislav Tretiak, the best goalie in the world, is not on the ice for the Soviets. His backup, Vladimir Mishkin, has replaced him.
As we start the second period now, a change for the Soviet Union as Vladimir Mishkin becomes the new goalie after Tretiak had given up two in the first period.
Early in the second period, with Mishkin in the game, the Soviets take back the lead with a power play goal.
Kutov up ahead to Maltsev. Maltsev on a breakaway. Maltsev gets it by Craig to give the Soviets the lead. So the Americans with a chance.
The second period gets a little sleepy compared to the first. The Soviet goal and Tretiak getting benched for poor play are the biggest things to happen. At second intermission, it's the Soviets 3, the Americans 2. During the pregame, Ken Dryden said the United States would find out just how good they are, as though a moral victory might be enough. At this point, the Americans have secured that moral victory. After losing to the Soviets 10-3 just 2 weeks ago, they're trailing by just one entering the third period. But this moment isn't legendary because of a moral victory. With 13 minutes left, the Americans get only their second power play opportunity of the game, and they break through.
Perhaps their final rush on this power play opportunity. 13 seconds left in the penalty. We chop it in, followed by Johnson. They score!
An arena that felt sleepy in the second period comes to life. Only two shifts later, the crowd loses its mind. With exactly 10 minutes left to play, Team USA captain Mike Ruzioni gives the U.S. its first lead. You can hear the excitement in Al Michaels' voice as he makes the call.
Mike Ruzioni!
So now you have a one-goal lead with 10 minutes left to play against the best hockey team in the world, which is nice. But 10 minutes is an eternity, and the Soviets start ramping up the urgency. Just moments after the U.S. takes the lead, a Soviet shot from close range clangs off the post.
Lebedev now out in front of Krutov, and it looked like it hit the post.
It did, it did. Maltsev was wide open. There he's again.
Maltsev can't get it in from the left side. The Soviets putting the pressure on. Maltsev.
Jim Craig makes save after save. Al Michaels is fixated on the clock, counting down the minutes and then the seconds. Most teams would pull the goalie when trailing in the waning moments. It's what the Americans did when they tied Sweden. But the Soviets don't believe in pulling the goalie. They never even practice 6-on-5. They don't think they'll need it. And so Mishkin stays on the ice as the crowd reaches a fever pitch.
Touch on the icing call to the faceoff, and the Soviets get in with 1:59 to play in the game. Ken Morrow is...
There are only so many truly miraculous moments in sports history. Moments when the impossible happens. These miraculous moments become immortal when paired with unforgettable commentary, and Al Michaels just nails it. Here it is, the final 30 seconds is taped for ABC that Friday evening.
Get a piece of it to sweep it away. 28 seconds, the crowd going insane. Karlamov shooting it into the American end again. Morrow is back there. Now Johnson, 19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. Vigiletinov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable.
Word spread differently in 1980 than it does now. No apps, no push notifications, no social media. Whether they heard it on the radio or on the local news or from a neighbor who heard from a friend who heard from someone else, the whole country knows about the incredible victory over the Soviets before ABC even goes live in primetime.
The 13th Winter Olympic Games.
Good evening, I'm Jim McKay reporting to you live from Lake Placid, New York, and the picture behind me is also live on Main Street, Lake Placid. From the
time they Jim McKay is sitting in front of a live shot of Lake Placid's Main Street. He's trying to keep a straight face as ABC opens its coverage, but it looks like Mardi Gras out there. Everyone knows they're about to watch history as ABC airs the game for the first time in the United States. 2 days later, the Americans play Finland in the final game of the medal round. They can still finish anywhere from first to fourth, the gold medal or off the podium, depending on the outcome of this game. The U.S. is down 2-1 heading into the second intermission. Herb Brooks walks into the locker room and he tells his team this: "If you lose this game, you'll take it to your graves." He added an expletive in there, but you get the idea. The Americans scored 3 goals in the last period to take a commanding lead and to clinch the gold medal.
Four to the gold medal. This impossible dream comes true.
The cover of Sports Illustrated that next week shows the U.S. hockey team in celebration, an American flag waving somewhere in the crowd. It was the first Sports Illustrated cover to run without a headline or type of any kind. It didn't need it, the photographer said later. Everyone in America knew what happened.
Back inside now. They clinched the goal.
After the medal ceremony, after the Lake Placid Olympics, the players head to their respective homes. Survivors of a brutal schedule, heroes to a nation, gold medals around their necks. That nation wants to say thank you to these college kids who bested the Soviets, but they don't know where to find them. And so Al Michaels gets overrun with letters at his ABC office in New York City. Americans from coast to coast tell him how much that moment, how much that team means to them. Team USA hasn't won gold in ice hockey since 1980. The Cold War and the Soviet Union ended long ago. Today, international rosters feature NHL players, so we no longer ask a bunch of kids to go out and play the best in the world. No matter what happens next in Olympic hockey, the world will never again see anything like what unfolded in Lake Placid on that Friday afternoon, and what so many Americans saw for the first time on tape delay. Sports Wax is a documentary series brought to you by GrumpyBuck.com, GrumpyBuck.com. Subscribe to get new episodes that share a sports memory with a heavy dose of nostalgia each week.